Hello, and welcome back to the Lunch Hour Geek Out, the podcast that is for life, and not just that year we all stayed indoors. My name is John Holt, and with me is novelist, freelance writer, and demigod of the Woolwich people, James Brigginshaw. How are you?
Very good. Just got back from a ritual sacrifice. I was satiated with the bodies of 5 deep fried chickens.
I thought you were going to say someone else then.
It could have got really dark. But, yeah. Well, we've already got the darkness out pre.
Any time someone says the word deep, I'm like, oh, here we go.
Deep, moist. That way, either of those. You're just asking for trouble, aren't you, really?
It's always a good time. So the world took a bit of a dive during the break, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. Now we're at the point where we're like, oh, do you remember when COVID was a thing?
Yeah. Apparently that still is a thing, because literally I know about 40 people with COVID at the moment, which I didn't at its peak.
Yep. So, well, isn't that the whole thing now that like COVID, at least in terms of like transmissions, is at its peak pretty much now?
Yeah.
And more, I'm the same. At previous stages of the bacterial conflict, I knew a couple of people that had it, but now it's like pretty much everybody I know has had it, apart from me, and I'm going on holiday next week, so it's really fucking ominous. But
do you still have to do like a test before you get on a plane and all that?
I don't think so. I don't think when I went back to Ireland in November, I didn't have to. And I got my booster jab Sunday. Slap on the wrist.
Oh, you only just had it?
Yeah, only just had it. Slap on the wrist for me. In case anyone's wondering, I'm not an anti-vaxxer who suddenly had a change of heart. I was just informed that the vaccination does apparently wear off after like 2 doses. And I was like, really? And then I was like, yes. So here's my problem. They shouldn't call it a booster, because they should just call it a third jab, because that's effectively what it is. And it stops morons like me going, but I've been double vaccinated, so I'm fine. Anyway.
So that's COVID. Close to home.
There's and then there was
sodding
the
Great War with everyone's favorite shirtless slaphead small dick twat in Russia. And Will Smith cancelled himself at the Oscars.
Unbelievable. Do you want to hear my take on the Will Smith?
Yeah, but just yours, because I'm sick of this story already. But go on.
I'm sick of this story, although the memes have been tremendous. Chris Rock is like, he's entitled to tell jokes because he is a comedian, and he's, to be honest, if anything, in the last few years, he's maybe kind of blunted his claws, if you like, a little bit. Wasn't an amazing joke. I didn't particularly find it offensive, even if he did know about the alopecia. Yeah, I get it. Alopecia is not a nice thing to have, but, you know.
I just told a bald joke before we got to this bit.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I called Vladimir Putin a slaphead.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Will Smith's going to walk in and punch me. Isn't it?
Just you're looking at your window out the back. That's just going to cave in. And
I told you, motherfucker!
Take my wife's name out of your fucking... So, yeah, he was entitled to say the joke. It was a bit groan-worthy. Oh, okay, yeah. Will Smith did initially the right thing by laughing it off, and he should have just left it there. If he had a genuine issue with it, which he obviously did, he should have pulled him up after the show.
So many different ways you could handle that.
So many different ways you could, and it just looked really awkward, and like he was crying and stuff, and it just looked a bit like, oh, it's just a bit. And the thing is, like, I've seen a lot of reactions saying, oh, he's entitled to stand up to his wife, this stand up for his wife, blah, blah, blah. That's all fine. However, what it boils down to is this is an actor who has striven most of his career to basically win an Oscar. Personally, I don't think he's ever been deserving of one, but other people have thought differently. This is like his homecoming. This is like in the bag.
Mm.
And he will never, ever be remembered for winning Best Actor. He will never. And that's on him. And people can say, oh, well, he can do what he wants. Like, yeah, but he won't be remembered for the thing he was meant to go to the Oscars for.
Mm.
And it just like, I don't know about you, but I found out about the incident before I even knew who won an Oscar. To be honest, I only looked at who won the Oscars probably about 2 days after the Oscars actually happened, such was the
array
around it.
I didn't really want to talk about it this much, but anyway.
It was a stupid thing to do, and he just made his own, you know, seemingly chaotic personal life, it's just brought it all to the fore. So, you know, people are entitled to do whatever they want, but there are consequences, whether it's right or right. Anyway, yeah.
Mm. Okay, so back on track. We've decided to change format. So this podcast now is all about the news and the reviews, because we had to weigh up what we enjoyed, what took the least amount of effort, and what the people wanted. So here we are. Not to say that the main topic won't come back at all, but for the immediate future, this will be the format. And the main topic, you know, might come back as a special one-off episode, bonus episode, you know, if we figure out the secret to time displacement and manipulation of it, and we have nothing but time, then I imagine things will be much better. But anyway, something I wanted to check with you.
Mm.
During the break, we went out.
Yes, we did.
We went to Canada. We had some beers. We tried to get into a posh restaurant over about 2 hours and failed. And we ended up in another bar, which was kind of like a nightclub during the day. It was really weird.
Very dark, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And we were drinking whiskey.
Yeah.
Stood at the bar talking about fucked up, toxic shit we've seen on social media.
Yeah.
And now, how I remember this is we stand there, and I'm probably sort of mid-rant. I don't even remember what I'm ranting about, because we were on whiskey at that point. It's like 5:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
And how I remember this is this huge guy with a huge beard taps me on the shoulder.
Yeah.
I turn around, and he says, son, you got to be yourself. And if that don't work, then fuck him. And then, like, you walked off.
Yeah.
And you left me there. And I wasn't sure what was going to happen. Just me and this guy was just staring at each other for ages, just nodding. And it was like, are we going to hug? Are we going to fight? I don't know what we're going to do. And then amazing. You WhatsApped me from the bar. It's probably the closest anyone's ever been to me when they've sent me a WhatsApp message. So admittedly, that line I just said is from House Party 3. But that's how I remember it in my head.
Yeah.
Sit in your head.
I remember you saying at the time as well that he said those words that you said. So I think that's right. Because, we were at the bar. We were talking about, you know, relationships and things that we'd been through and this, that, and the other. And this guy who had a friend with him, but his friend also, well, he kind of disappeared quite a lot, leaving his friend on his own for like weirdly, like an inordinately long amount of time, like 40 minutes.
Even his friend was like, this guy's weird.
Even his friend was
he
like,
doesn't listen to me, but he's listening to their conversation over there. What a fucker.
And there was, you know, it wasn't that busy at that time, but there was us two, and then there was them two stood next to us, and his mate that he was chatting to.
Yeah.
Didn't kind of pay any notice, but yeah, that guy kept looking over at us, and I thought, you know, he's having a conversation, he's physically listening to our conversation over the guy that's like speaking to him.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really weird, and I thought, to be honest, this guy was going to come over and just start a fight or something.
Yeah.
But then, Yeah, and then I messaged you to be like, that fucking guy.
He kept looking at us, and I'm still like caught in the middle, yeah. In like the death stare.
I didn't realise you guys were like nodding at each other as if you were just entering like a military bar.
Awkwardness, like, just be yourself. And I'm like, yeah.
But it's that classic thing, like, where someone gets really drunk and then someone says, someone who they've not really known or never met before says like one thing, and they go, oh, you know what, man, you know what your problem is, you got to do X, Y, Z. And yeah. It's like, you haven't a fucking clue.
Someone's seen my entire life's history.
Yeah. Exactly. And he was listening to our conversation while having a conversation with someone else. Like, it was very unlikely that he actually got the fucking full story to make an informed opinion. It's very bizarre.
Oh, so funny.
But enjoyed. Yeah, we tried to get into a...
We got in there eventually.
Yeah.
And you ordered a non-alcoholic beer by mistake. Oh. And I feel like that ruined your night.
It actually... Do you know what it actually did? Because I was like a really nice level of drunk. And then went into this Chinese restaurant called Ping Pong. We tried to get in about three times before. Once because they were full. Another, they were like...
Once the first time I thought it was a bar and I found out it weren't a bar.
That's
like,
it, yeah.
I was like, fuck you for your false advertising. We walked out.
Yeah, we're like, we can't have a drink in here.
and then we went back, was like, please can we come in? And they were like, no,
I'm quite hungry now, please. And she was like, oh yeah, we'll have a table ready in 4 hours. So we're like, okay, cool, we'll come back then. And then came back the third time. And then I got it was... So this is my bugbear at the moment, now that you mentioned it, is people calling 0% beer, calling it something fancy so you don't actually know that it's non-alcoholic beer.
Funny you should say that, because since that incident, I've spotted it on nearly every menu I've looked at.
Really?
Yeah.
Because it was...
And I've been like, misleading.
Honestly, because it's called Peroni, and I should look this up. Maybe I'll put it on the Insta. At some point, but it's called Peroni. It's got like a fancy Italian name, and I just thought, oh, it's just another variety of Peroni. So I ordered that, and not only was it 0%, it tasted like absolute shit. So well, Chris is happily, getting merry.
I had that amazing cocktail. I've been struggling to remember what it was called. It was like a pina colada, but it wasn't. Pina. It was like,
and it certainly wasn't colada.
It had colada in it, but it was like something else, and it was amazing. Oh, I love that drink.
Yeah, I can't remember. I want to say it was coconut in it, but I don't know if there was.
Yeah, no, I think there was, but it was green. And I can't remember.
Yeah.
It was like broccoli colada or something like that.
Broccolada. Yeah, it was good, but because the table service was left wanting a bit as well. Like, I was stuck with this non-alcoholic Peroni, and I could just feel myself sobering up. And, I'm going to say it ruined my night. I'm having a fantastic time.
Love it. Memory plus alcohol equals fun.
Yes,
indeed. So, let's just move on into the news. So, James, I know you're now a member of the PC Master Race and all that.
Yeah.
But have you been watching the PlayStation State of Play things at all?
No, I know there was a thing recently about it's like the PS Plusing, or the thing it's meant to be rivaling Game Pass.
Oh, yeah, that sounds rubbish.
Not been received very well.
Oh, it's terrible. It's no different from what it is now.
Yeah, people like, it's like PS Plus, but with some...
It's like the newest game they got on there is Spider-Man Miles Morales, a PS5 launch title nearly 2 years ago. It's like, wow.
Do you know what? And it's mental, you should say. Like, Miles Morales was a launch title on PS5 2 years ago, and like... Mm. How many games have they released since then? Like three?
Yeah.
Three, unbelievable. Yeah,
it's crackers. But so the State of Play, I think it happened before the last one, and it had a new title from Capcom.
Ooh.
And you need to look up this trailer, because this is the most nuts thing I've ever seen. Mm. Right. Capcom have announced this game called Exo Primal.
Okay.
Which looks like, I think everyone was expecting Dino Crisis remake title to like come up. No, Exoprimal. Exoprimal basically concerns Anthem-style exosuits with piles of fucking dinosaurs falling out of portals in the sky. Piling up World War Z. What the fuck is this, James?
It looks nuts.
It's like crazy.
Really arcadey. And it's like, these velociraptors, they fall like hundreds of feet.
Yeah.
And then they just get up and attack you. It does look mental. And
it's like those shit Earth Defense Force games, but with dinosaurs.
I was going to say, That's kind of what it seems to be tapping into, but I don't know that people will buy that. I mean, there was...
Looks shit. I can't mince words. It'll either be great bad, or it'll just be shit.
Just be bad. Well, there was... I think it was like a cross-platform game, but there's a game called, I think it was called Dino Carnage, where it's like basically like Left 4 Dead, Back 4 Blood, whatever, but with dinosaurs, and that was fine. Sticking dinosaurs, I know there's a whole thing where it's like, oh, you stick dinosaurs in something, it instantly becomes cool. It's kind of the opposite now, it just becomes shit.
Oh, you're contradicting something you previously said on this podcast.
Well, I did once famously say, why are there not more dinosaur films?
Yeah, you did.
But where are they? Where are they? A year later, I sound like a broken record. Hollywood isn't listening. When will they open their eyes? Anyway. Yeah.
Triceratops and T-Rexorcist. The scripts just sit here gathering dust on my... on my desk here.
Makers of Sharknado, you can get in touch.
I am available on Twitter at HoltmeisterJC if you're interested.
Well, there is it Jurassic Dominion? But let's be honest, it'll be terrible. So
phone booth with a triceratops, that's all I'm saying. That's my one-line pitch. It sells itself, bruv. I'm always saying this to you.
But is it like the film Phone Booth with Colin Farrell, but like the sniper is... a T-Rex with a blow dart, but then the twist is that because he's got a little short stumpy arms, might actually use a blow dart at the end.
Or Collateral with a dinosaur in it.
What, T-Rex falling on the taxi? Yeah.
The T-Rex is like, just gets in the back of the thing and he's like jammed up. He's like, just take me to these five places, all right? Don't ask me any questions.
Simon, this is the British Museum, and it's like the skeleton of my mother is there.
Wipes away a tear.
I can't even wipe away my tears because my arms are too fucking stumpy.
You try being me. I had to open the car door with my teeth. How do you like it?
No, you don't have a door handle. Satisfied. I think that's got, just like the T-Rex, I think it's got legs. But also not just like a T-Rex, not a lot else, really. But, etc.
This is ridiculous. I haven't even had an edible today, and we're going all crack out of the So, second news story is one I know you've been excited for. The Obi-Wan Kenobi Disney Plus TV show. Did you see the trailer?
I saw the trailer.
And I take it from the sudden downcast in your voice that you are not impressed.
No, I'll try and keep this. Yes, go.
Let me play devil's advocate for a minute.
Okay.
It looks not like I expected it to be. I expected it to be a lot of brooding in the desert over mistakes made, looking out for Luke and that kind of thing. But it looks like...
Why wasn't it that?
Well, yeah, but what it was actually surprised me, and I don't know why I thought any different now, because it looks like it takes place fairly soonish after Revenge of the Sith, with the Jedi still being hunted down, and it looks like that's a big portion of the story.
Mm.
And that didn't do anything for you either.
No. no, like we've had other media, like... Fallen Order, which has discussed the whole hunting the Jedi thing. We've also had Clone Wars TV show that has dealt with that to greater or lesser degree. I just think I'll try and keep it succinct, but basically the story should have been Obi-Wan brooding in the desert, not getting up to very much. And I know people go, it's not very exciting. It's like, but that's his whole character arc. That is why he is Obi-Wan, that he had a chance to kind of, well, you know, he was living his life, living his best life, and then, you know, he felt he was massively responsible for what happened to Anakin, and as a result went into this kind of self-imposed exile, and yeah. I think that's a much more interesting story. But you know, like, if an old person moves to the desert, they don't get involved in adventures and japes, they just get a bit sandy and yeah, have to eat scorpions for dinner or whatever. Like, it's just I don't want to see Obi-Wan jumping around fighting inquisitors from previous Star Wars media that I don't care about anymore. Like, I don't care what happens to inquisitors. Like,
I do wonder if this is going to be, you know, the Book of Boba Fett. Okay, it's basically the Mandalorian for two whole episodes. So I do wonder if this is going to be called Obi-Wan, but then there's a good sort of 40% of it that's setting up something else that we haven't even thought of.
Guarantee you, so scribes of the world, mark this down now, there will be an episode or a significant chunk of an episode dedicated to Ahsoka.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. 100%. Didn't we hear that she is in it?
Yeah.
Was that a news story previously? No, I said about Anakin being in the Ahsoka TV show. Didn't I? That was it.
Okay.
Yeah, but he's also in this.
He's also in it, which I'm like, how? Like, is he playing Anakin or is he playing Darth Vader?
Oh, he's actually Darth Vader, yeah. Because yeah. I heard another story. I didn't read the story, but I saw the headline saying Darth Vader not fully formed in Obi-Wan Kenobi. So what that means, I don't know, because he looked pretty fully formed at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
Maybe it's going to be like he'll be in like prosthetics or where he's all burnt and stuff. Like, you maybe see more of him out of the suit. But again, it begs the question, because like the whole, like I'm waiting for them to trip themselves up, because there's a whole bit, you know, when they fight in A New Hope, the whole point of them seeing each other is that they haven't seen each other since Obi-Wan was exiled and Anakin became Darth Vader. But this is going to, I can guarantee he's going to awkwardly be like, oh, but actually they fought like six times since then.
You know? Yeah. Interesting. Okay, so that's Obi-Wan Kenobi. That's due out May 25th, I believe. So the next news story. A new game is in development from CD Projekt Red. Guess what it is?
I think I've seen this. I believe it is The Witcher 4.
It is a new Witcher game, yeah. So it's in
Back
development.
To the classics. Can't fuck that up. So
from CD Projekt Red, and will apparently be made using the Unreal Engine 5, which, if you were a PlayStation 5 owner, James, you could have seen a really nice Matrix-centric demo of and been super impressed on a 4K TV.
Saw it on
but
YouTube,
you didn't,
mate.
Did you? Oh, you saw it on okay, you basically.
It wasn't
saw
exactly
it.
The same. It wasn't the same.
But it's impressive, let me tell you. When you're actually playing it,
okay.
Yeah, very impressive, especially like the level of detail in like cityscapes and things like that. But this is a Witcher game, so it's going to be huge, because if I remember correctly, The Witcher 3 The Wild Hunt was the first game to exceed 100 hours in terms of playtime.
Oh, interesting. That wouldn't surprise me, because I know with the DLC and stuff, people were saying like 200-300 hours and this kind of had to be the next, after Cyberpunk, this kind of had to be the next logical progression. And I think that's, unfortunately, that's going to be in the back of everyone's mind when this gets released. Is it going to be Cyberpunk 2.0? Because I think they've only just released the next gen version of Cyberpunk last few weeks.
It's literally only just come out, but I think they've only just released like the final patch for the first game, like and we're talking like a year and a bit on from release now. But you know, all they need to do to course correct is just release a game that's finished, for fuck's sake. It's not too hard, is it? Like, finish the product, release it to the market.
I never understand this whole, yeah, just make it into, like, with a release like that, it was always going to do well, so why?
Did you play The Witcher 3? I don't think we've ever spoken about this.
Yeah, I tried to get into it twice and maybe got about 10 hours into it.
Was you not impressed?
No, I don't know what I didn't like about it. It just didn't. I think it's
an amazing game.
Mm.
I never finished it, but it is truly. I think that was maybe the second game I ever played on the last gen.
Okay.
When I had an Xbox One, and it was just like awesome.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was just a bit too. It just kind of felt like Skyrim, but with a few extra bits and a bit grittier. But
yeah, I mean, it's very RPG.
Yeah,
and I just stat heavy and
yeah. You know, there's been a couple of games like that. It's like GTA 5. People say is great, and I just never got into it at all.
No, I don't know why you never got into that either.
No, and do you know what, Chris? I haven't got an answer that I'd be happy with to give you.
Have you not? That.
No. But I think, you know, yeah, The Witcher 4, like, it'll get some goodwill back for CD Projekt Red. Be interesting to see what they base it on, because I think the games so far have been based, obviously, purely on the novels, but now with the TV series... I mean, I don't know what the future of that is, but are they going to lean a bit more into that or get?
Well, it's like six books, I think.
Mm.
And I'm not sure that series has even been finished. I think it might still be going.
Yeah.
Much like Game of Thrones, actually, technically, is still going as a book series, which is weird.
Without actually doing the next actual entry into the actual fucking timeline. But yes, you're right.
Yeah, so who knows when that will be out, but hopefully it'll be finished anyway.
Hopefully it'll be complete. That's absolutely my
Bare minimum you can do.
I expect you to finish the game. Call me a tyrant, but that's I do like a game to be finished when it gets released.
Yeah,
I'm a bit old fashioned like that.
Who could blame you?
Who can blame me?
All right, and then final news story. Is hopefully this will make you as excited as it makes me, but probably not.
Almost certainly the opposite.
Yeah. Mandy and Beyond the Black Rainbow director Panos Cosmatos has lined up a new movie.
Ooh.
To be made with A24, very architects of the elevated horror genre that we were talking about off mic.
Mm-hmm.
So the new film is called Necrocosm.
Ooh.
And it is a phantasmagorical fantasy nightmare set in a strange galaxy where two lovers are torn apart by a malevolent invasion.
Ah, oh, Mandy.
Well, it sounds exactly like it, doesn't it? Just in outer space. And it's co-written by Megan Huang, who I don't know.
Not a big fan of her work. No.
Yeah, so... I am very pleased about this. It's been 4 years since Mandy came out.
It's been that long, wow.
Blew everyone the fuck away.
Uh-huh.
And I think everyone's been really keen to see what his next thing was, because I think it was like 8 years between Beyond the Black Rainbow and Mandy. So it's good that we haven't had to wait 8 years for another movie. So
yeah.
This hasn't gone into production yet. It's just been announced. So further news will probably trickle out.
Yeah, happy with that, because Mandy was pretty tremendous. So
yeah, it is fantastic movie.
And the whole cosmic element, well, that can't be a bad thing. Are there any actors or anything?
No, nothing else like that. It's just all the sort of production info at the moment. You know, this is going to be produced by this company and released by this company.
It's better to stick this thing here and...
Yeah. But I think this director has got like a short coming out as part of Guillermo del Toro's new Netflix horror anthology show. I think he's got an episode in that. Ooh, so I think that'll be out by the end of the year. So
we'll see what that's like.
Oh, you didn't? Yeah, like del Toro's got a new Pinocchio movie coming out as well.
Oh, I know about the
Netflix Christmas.
I know about the Pinocchio one, because that's been rumbling on for years, seemingly. But the TV anthology would be very, very excited to see that.
Yeah. Yeah, I do love a good horror anthology show.
Anything by GDT, as I'm calling him from
GDT
2 seconds ago. Yeah.
Did you watch Nightmare Alley yet?
No, I've still not got around to it.
It's on Disney Plus, for fuck's sake.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
I will definitely, I will go and watch that. But yeah, nice me and Disney Plus might need to take a break after. winter events.
Fair play. Fair enough. All right, so that's the news for this week. Let's move now into our reviews of the week. So both of us saw a little movie. A little movie came out beginning of March.
Yeah, very low scale, very...
very, very low-key indie production. short, sharp, and to the point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was so brief. It was like a candle in the wind.
Little movie they're calling The Batman. The Batman.
Not even Batman. The Batman. The Batman. I mean...
Now, we both saw this, let's have a little bit of back and forth. Now,
yes.
Let me ask you a question, first of all. The first 15 minutes of this movie, how did it make you feel?
Fucking great, because they... Ooh. It's really overdone at this point, but the way they played Something in the Way by Nirvana, I was like, yeah.
See, I said this to you when we went out to Canada, it threw me the fuck off the beginning of this movie because it's so grim. Emo. And let's be honest, most trailers that come out are not an accurate representation of the movie.
No, never.
So the fact that that trailer that we raved about on one of the first episodes of this podcast turned out to be exactly representative of this movie just threw me right off. I was like, I don't know what to do. I don't know whether I should go home, ask for my money back.
Turn this off, yeah.
I was not prepared for it. So it took me like a good 10, 15 minutes to sort of get into it. Because I was like, this is just like so dark.
Yeah, it's because I feel like we always talk about with superhero films. It's like, oh, it's really dark. It's really gritty. But this feels like the... kind of happy medium before, you know, you get into that kind of Zack Snyder like parody of being dark, where like this is kind of definitely in tonally, yeah, I think it was pitch perfect.
But it does feel a lot like the Rorschach sections of the Watchmen movie.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, definitely feels like he's got drawn a lot of inspiration from that, because he's like, as Bruce Wayne and Batman, he's kind of imbalanced. Although there's a whole thing about, oh, he doesn't kill people. He
beats the shit out of them.
And very clearly hurts them, which I do enjoy that, because the whole thing. I mean, there's a bit later on in the film where I think it's implied that Batman uses other people to kill other people. But anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's strange, isn't it? Cause this was like way more emo than I thought it would ever be. And
I mean,
somehow,
black eyeliner, which is the most emo thing that you could possibly have.
But they didn't disguise it when he took the hood off. It's actually, no, he blackens up his eyes.
I like that. That was a detail I really liked.
But that was the thing. Like, I did not think it was I didn't think it was possible to go more grounded than they did with the Nolan movies, and yet they did, because for as dark and sort of horror inflected as this thing is, he does things like abseils down buildings. You know, he's got a wingsuit at one point.
He does do the gliding thing, which I like that as well.
And the Batmobile is basically like a souped up
it's like a Dodge or something.
Yeah, it is like a Dodge Charger. Basically, just with like sharp edges. Basically.
That was great. I really like the introduction of the Batmobile. Was like, that was a proper like punching the air moment. Like, I really did really did enjoy that bit.
Okay. So, like, if we think about, like, famous Batman in cinema. So if we say, like, so Ben Affleck's Batman is heavily influenced by, like, Frank Miller's version of the character.
Yeah.
Christian Bale's version of the character is quite influenced by Frank Miller again, but a different Batman, like Batman Year One. And then you've got Joel Schumacher's Batman, who is heavily influenced by, you know, Adam West, Burt Ward era.
Yeah.
So I think we can safely say that Robert Pattinson is doing a version of the Lego Batman. Yeah. Darkness! No parents!
Yeah, although it's quite nice because they do scale back in that you don't see his parents die, which is merciful, frankly, because we've all seen it a million times.
I don't need to see a string of pearls hitting the concrete in slow motion.
No, exactly. No, especially not when Zack Snyder did it. In slow motion, I definitely didn't have to see that again. And the whole thing about becoming what you fear and becoming Batman, like, is really good that we didn't have to see that. I thought the so Robert Pattinson, I mean, I really liked him. I think he's a terrific actor, and I really like the guy as well. Like, he just seems quite dour and self-deprecating, which is always good in my book. I put him up there. I don't think I'd put him as, I mean, are we talking what Michael Keaton's a benchmark of, like, the best Batman?
I don't know. I still think.
And I know some people are like, oh, some of them are really good Batman or really good Bruce Wayne, but I don't buy into that. Like, they're a package, so you have to do both equally well, which I think he does here.
Do you think? But yeah. I'd like to point out that, I don't know if you realize this, but Bruce Wayne, out of the costume, is like 5% of this movie. He is in the Batman costume pretty much the entire running time, which is like something that they've never done before.
Mm.
So I liked it. It's a cool costume as well. Yeah, it is a pretty cool costume. But the thing is, although I liked this, I didn't love this film.
No, I didn't either, to be fair.
Did you not? Oh, I thought you were going to say something different.
I loved aspects of it. Yeah. And then the rest of it was, I mean, with the Riddler, I really liked the Riddler until they kidnapped him. They arrested him. And then when...
I know.
I love... Paul Dano is amazing in, frankly, everything. He's one of the best actors I've ever seen. But he does ham it up a little bit when he's in the cell. Like,
he comes close to Ezra Miller's Trash Can Man levels of misjudgment of what madness is.
Yeah, he's like, I'm just totally mad.
I mean, it's all well and good, right? You can have Seven or Zodiac as your influences for your movie, and you can wear them on your sleeve like this movie does. But doing that felt sort of like, well, we've seen this before. You know, we have seen this done before, and the plot with the you know, the Riddler, it's not a million miles away from what they did with the Joker in The Dark Knight, is it?
And it was the one thing I was like, oh my God, this is like, they basically just ripped this straight off of The Dark Knight, was when he was doing the those videos, those phone videos, and then torturing.
Yeah,
like, I mean, that's exactly what happened in The Dark Knight. So it was kind of like, it was a memorable villain until actually he wasn't. Then we've got a sniff of a sequel as well, which, I mean, I'd watch it, but I'm not. I mean, have you seen, actually, consequently, the spoiler alert here, the deleted scene with the Joker?
Yeah, I have. I was just about to bring this up, because did you watch it? Watched it?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
That, to me, is very representative of this sort of new direction, because you don't see him fully in that deleted scene, but you see glimpses, and he is
hideous, man.
Yeah, it's very much, this is a horror movie monster.
Yeah, that's the thing. He is like Frankenstein's monster. I mean, he's got like healing skin and burns.
Yeah, like, what's going on with the back of his neck?
So weird. Yeah, and it's like hairs all over the place. Yeah, and there are other things. Like, I think at this point, I think, to be honest, either of us could audition for Alfred and could do just as good a job. Like, they're just like, we'll get somebody slightly cockney but can also kind of speak proper. And
I felt that that was where the movie sort of tripped over itself a little bit. It sort of lapsed into incoherence a couple of times because you had this Riddler thing going on, and then you had this, oh, Bruce Wayne's parents might not be who you think they are. And I was kind of a little bit like, this all came out at like the 2 hour mark, and I was a bit like, what?
Yeah, I didn't need that. The whole thing where it's like, oh, not everybody in the world is good. It's like, yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is, it's too long.
Way too long. Cut half hour out of that at least.
Certain people on my Twitter feed saw this three times the opening weekend, and I'm like, well, how you have that much time? You have to teach me your secrets. But anyway, due to the emo factor, some of it was a bit unintentionally hilarious. I did laugh when I was not supposed to.
Day one. It's just another shit day.
Day one. Why? There is, though, isn't it? And like, honestly, like the last 10 minutes with a little bit of like helping out in a disaster, I was like, is this supposed to be funny? Because this seems to betray the entire tone that you're going for. And to me, this does not work.
my friend who I saw it with, brought up a really good point when he was rescuing those people. He was like, okay, that's fine. But he was like, why were the people hiding? What were they hiding from? Like fucking water.
Yeah. But I think there was a bit like where they were sort of scared of him, but then he was holding a flare or something. And then
I can't remember
exactly, but I think one of them like reaches out and touches him or something like that. And then he's like, I see, not all people are bad.
Yeah, now I'm going to help and I'm going to be in.
I was going to kill this little girl, but now I'm not.
Now I'm going to let her live.
Yeah. Now she gets to live because she touched me and Cameron's fucked off.
And to be honest, I feel like somebody probably suggested, like, with that whole montage at the end where it's like saving people, it wouldn't surprise me if someone was like, obviously it wouldn't have happened by then, but if someone was like, oh, should we have him in Ukraine meeting Zelensky and helping out, you know, besieged locals and things, like, it kind of felt like he'd gone from like an almost Superman, like, oh, I'm just here to help people.
But I'd
agree. I think that it falls apart in the last, so the really good stuff is like the detective stuff. When he's on the scene, the police don't trust him.
See, a lot of people online have been reacting like that's his brand new revolutionary take on the character. But
yeah, Bale's
version did quite a lot of detective stuff.
True. That's true. And it's, yeah, that's a good point. And obviously in the video games, that's a major part as well.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of does all the detective stuff. But then, it falls apart in when the madcap scheme gets unveiled and dams start bursting and then like an entire city floods. That was when I was like, okay, you've lost me here. And
that flood didn't seem that bad, to be honest, did it?
No, it seemed all right. It probably needed
it. Like, oh man, it's filthy, look, isn't it? It's up to our ankles. Shit. Because we better call Batman. Fuck. We can't get out of this ourselves.
And then there was a whole thing one bit I did unintentionally laugh at was a bit where he pushes like an electrical cable, exposed electrical cable, goes into the water. And in my head, I was like, every single person in that water is now officially dead. But they still showed him like swimming around and stuff. So, like, every single, there must have been about 20,000 people in the water. Every single one of them, the man, woman and child, is now a fried piece of charcoal. And there's no getting away from
that. That's the final line of his voiceover is, I saved three children tonight, but I killed 19. Easy come, easy go. Little wins.
To save the many, we must save the few. And just leave the many, to be honest. There's just so many of them.
Oh, dear.
So, like, good, but we could... It was solid, but I think, we could do... If there's a sequel, less of the melodramatic stuff, less of the... Kind of like it did kind of go into madcap scheme territory again.
So I loved Catwoman, I loved the Penguin and the car chase.
Penguin was great, to be fair. Yeah,
and the Batmobile, and like, you know, the sort of grounded nature of things. But it was it's kind of like a mixed bag. And I think I might, there's a chance, like, this is a sort of film that I might like more the second time.
Yeah, that's true. I'll tell you who I did like. I can't remember the name of the actor's name, but he played Jim Gordon.
Oh, Jeffrey Wright. Yeah, he's fantastic.
Jeffrey Wright. He's just great in everything. He was one of the highlights from the Craig Bond era as well.
Yeah, 100%.
But yeah, you're right. Maybe it does need a second viewing. But I think it was good. But there was nothing. I think the way I look at it is it would have been a better sequel to Dark Knight than Dark Knight Rises. Tonally, maybe, because I thought with the Dark Knight Rises,
I see what you mean, but then because of
the news and the crazy,
but they need, like, that's the thing. If you're making a trilogy, each one needs to up the ante, doesn't it?
That's true. It would.
So if you had the Dark Knight and then you had this version of the Riddler and what he does after the Dark Knight, it would have been the same film essentially.
Yeah, it would have been. So no,
they had to sort of make it more epic, I guess.
Yeah. I guess what I'm saying in a weird roundabout way is probably enjoyed it more than The Dark Knight Rises.
Did you?
Yeah, because I remember...
People don't seem to like that film.
Yeah, I don't think... I think it's one of those where, like Man of Steel, people loved it at the time, and then as time's gone on, people have kind of gone, oh, I haven't... Although, ironically, I do really like Man of Steel. Yeah, I think with the stuff, like with the nuke and... I mean, you look at it now and you think, Anne Hathaway, I mean, she wasn't bad as Catwoman, but she wasn't great.
She's no Zoe Kravitz.
She's no Zoe Kravitz.
She's fantastic.
She is very good in it, to be fair. I really liked her. And Colin Farrell puts in a unrecognizable performance as a
thing.
And actually, I'd like to see... I wouldn't mind seeing, I mean, I probably would hate it if it actually happened, but like a spin-off with just him, because it feels like
that was the plan. There was like a Gotham PD Penguin Rise to Power type spin-off plan for like HBO Max.
Because I would have got behind that, because his character looked comfortable in the Batman universe, but also could have just... Could have been the sequel to Goodfellas or something like.
Do you know they filmed most of this in Glasgow?
Did they?
Like Glasgow doubles for Gotham. If you once you know that fact, you can actually see it. You'd be like, oh yeah. But it's weird, isn't it?
Be like a drunk Scottish man throwing up in the back alley. He's like, the rivers of scum. He's like, all right, laddie.
Yeah.
He offered me a hooch. Dear. I offered him my life. Yeah. I think good. It was good. They didn't really muck anything up. I just think, get rid of the intentionally silly stuff and madcap stuff, the unintentional, like, I'm so emo. I would kill myself, but I don't have the energy to do it because I'm so depressed. It's like, okay, we get it. We get you're really sad. Like, we do
understand. Yeah. I am, yeah. But he's like a broken person in this. Like, even when he's sort of like Bruce Wayne, he's like, I just want to eat berries. So it's like, if you're just eating berries, how have you got the strength to beat the shit out of all these people?
Yeah, this is true.
Fuck's sake.
But I really liked Robert Pattinson. I think he's a tremendous actor. And to be honest, one of the best actors we've kind of got around at the moment. I think, to be honest, just like my final note would be as well, I can't think of many actors who were really typecast and then kind of broke out of that. Maybe Matthew McConaughey? Because obviously after Twilight, people just saw him as like a kind of pretty boy kind of thing. And now he's...
Yeah, I think he's done what a lot of sort of good-looking young actors have had to do, in that they make really left-field choices for a couple of years to build up their credibility, so that then they can eventually come back into something like The Batman and be taken seriously.
Exactly, yeah. Daniel Radcliffe, take note, frankly.
Yeah, because Pattinson, like, since he finished the Twilight movies, he's worked with, like, he's been in, well...
He worked with one of the Davids, Finch or David Finch.
No, he worked
David
with
Lynch or
David Cronenberg.
Cronenberg,
like Chris Nolan. You know, he was in that movie High Life, that movie The Rover. You know,
Thingy Eggers with the Lighthouse.
Yeah, The Lighthouse. All these like indie performances where he's actually acting. You know, yeah. And he's fantastic. So, you know, you have to sort of do that because that's what Johnny Depp did.
Mm.
But think about Johnny Depp. So he comes from like TV teen heartthrob. So he just did all these weirdo performances for about 10 years, you know, where he's like hiding his good looks under loads of makeup with Tim Burton, John Waters, whoever. Mm-hmm. And then he just slides to the right and goes into Pirates of the Caribbean. And it's like a big blockbuster.
Do you know
that's the way to do it?
Do you know what Johnny Depp's best performance was, in my opinion?
What's that?
When he got eaten by the bed in Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay. So moving on. tell me about this movie. We're talking about elevated horror.
Yes.
And there's this movie. It's on my list of things to watch, but I haven't got to it. And you've actually gotten to it first.
That is genuinely a surprise, I think, for both of us.
This weird, freaky ass looking movie about sheep called Lamb. What happens in this?
Lamb is one of these films that is kind of the less you know going into it, the kind of more rewarding it is. So it centers on I think they're meant to be Norwegian, but it's this couple is played by Noomi Rapace, who is Swedish, but it focuses on, I think it's a Norwegian couple who are working and living on a farm on the kind of fucking Outer Hebrides or whatever, like completely isolated, surrounded by mountains and you know, kind of a kind of perma mist, if you like. And they're looking after, among other things, they're looking after sheep and obviously birthing sheep. I think it's just for their wool trade. I don't think there's anything implied about using them for their meat. I don't know if that's significant or not. Anyway, one day, one of the sheep gives birth, and the couple, when they see what this lamb is, or when they see what this sheep has given birth to, they're so, I guess, taken aback by it that they actually take it in themselves and rear as their own child. And then it's time.
So is this like a weird humanoid sheep thing?
To say whether it is or not would give away.
Did a guy fuck a sheep? Is what I'm getting at.
Again, to say more, to even say yes or no to that would.
Oh my god! Okay, yeah, this is. I'm gonna watch this tonight.
Yeah, there's. Yeah, I mean. Yeah, there's some of it is ambiguous, but yeah. Anyway, so they look after this. I mean, the film's called Lamb, so we'll call it. They look after this lamb, and rear it through childhood. But as the child gets older, or as the lamb gets older, and time passes, familial influences from the kind of surrounding area come in and kind of break apart this kind of family network, so that this couple, their relationship's been on the rocks. We're not sure why. I mean, it's really heavily implied as to why that is, but they're but it's not explicitly said, but they but this lamb coming along has kind of brought them closer together. They start enjoying their life more, start having sex and all that stuff, which apparently is a sign that, yeah, everything's going well. And then, yeah, some outside influences come in and threaten to disrupt that. Some secrets are brought up that don't necessarily threaten to shatter everything, but definitely kind of show that not everybody is kind of as perfect as they let on. There's some amazing animal acting in this film. There is a mother sheep who honestly puts in probably the best performance I've seen from an animal, genuinely. And I mean that.
The best performance I've seen in 2022.
I mean, why?
This is just from the sheep.
Why Little Betsy didn't get nominated for an Oscar? See, they need to. It's a bias Oscars that aren't nominating animals for roles. That's what's wrong with society. There's some really kind of, you know, the imagery is very bleak and stark and minimalist, but it's really arresting. It's shot like. It's gorgeous. You've got like these kind of big sprawling vistas kind of contrasting with this kind of isolated kind of farm and its inhabitants. I guess the film initially goes where you think it will go and then does a bit of a left field because you go, oh, okay, this thing has happened. So the next logical step is, and you can paint it in your head, you're like, oh, okay, things are going to go really badly wrong from here, and then they don't, and then they still don't, and they still don't, and then suddenly at the end there is a right turn or a left turn, and I was just like, what the fuck?
Oh really?
And then it ends on a really bleak kind of uncertain note, but then you're still thinking about the thing that happened before. There's some tragedy, but then who instigated the tragedy and how that happened? You're like, how is it? So, I mean, there's a lot to this film. I think it's kind of central message is about you can't. Well, what I took from it is you can't kind of prioritize your own happiness if it impacts on somebody else, and if to make yourself happy, you take something away from somebody else, that is going to come back to bite you in the ass.
Okay. I think you've put me off seeing this now.
You were saying like,
I know, I was just kind of like, what
did I say that immediately put you off it?
It just all sounds a bit depressing, to be honest.
No, it's not depressing. There's, I'd say the last 5-10 minutes, your depression is kind of contained by the shock of what happened. Like, it's the ending's bleak, but I was just like, but the thing that happened,
yeah,
what that thing was done, but like who that was instigated by. And so I was just like, that I was still trying to get my head around that rather than just like, oh, this is a horrible situation. But it, how you think the film's going to go initially, where you're like, oh, okay, there's this lamb, this, you know, this new child or whatever. You know, oh, this is obviously going to go a really predictable route. And then it just doesn't. And then you think, okay, but when's this shit going to hit the fan? And then it does. And then you're like, oh, fuck. Okay. So, yeah, I really like it. I think it was really stylish, kind of slow burn horror. There's no jump scares. It's all done with, you know, sound design. It's all very bleak and minimalist. Really good performance by Noomi Rapace, who I've kind of forgotten all about since
she's like, you know how every streaming thing on Netflix or anywhere really has Anthony Mackie in it. Noomi Rapace is like the female version of Anthony. She is in every streaming show and Netflix original.
She was in that weird film where there was like a girl for every day of the week,
and yeah, what happened to Monday, I think that was called.
I took one look at a trailer, I was like, I'm absolutely not gonna watch that. This is kind of, I mean, obviously Girl with the Dragon Tattoo is like her iconic defining performance, but she puts in a really great understated performance in this. There's very little dialogue as well, so it's all about what's kind of unseen and what's unsaid. I think you'll enjoy it.
Okay. Frankly. So that's Lamb, which is available now on VOD. And as part of the Mubi subscription. So on a flip side to the Batman and your sheep-based erotica, the flip side is I've played a video game. I've played a video game, which was an absolute ray of sunshine. And, you know, Elden Ring. not playing that. Played a little game called Ollie Ollie World, which is a sequel to Ollie Ollie and Ollie Ollie 2.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say it was a sequel to Ollie World. And they just add an extra Ollie for every... Anyway.
Yeah. So Ollie Ollie World is basically... It has a visual style which is reminiscent of that old... I think it was a Nickelodeon thing called... No, Cartoon Network thing called Adventure Time. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember Adventure Time, yeah.
Yeah, so Ollie Ollie World looks exactly like Adventure Time. And basically, you skate around various islands and courses on your way to, like, the sixth island, which is called Radlandia. And it's just fucking brilliant. I just love this game. It's cool in that the tutorial sort of unfolds as you go along. It doesn't sort of stop-start you sort of thing. So, for instance, now I'm on the final island, and I've still got tutorials to do. But to me, I could do everything, but there's, like, still new stuff to learn, you know. And some of these courses are absolutely nuts. Like, it's really cool because you'll, like, be on it and you'll be, like, railing down the side of a mountain kind of thing. And the video game camera, like, pans back and you are, like, in this massive sort of, like, landscape, just railing and jumping and wall riding and all that shit. It's amazing. And, yeah, the tutorial just doesn't bog down the fun of it at all. It's just constant fun. I've gotten pretty good at it. And I've actually only just healed this massive blister on my thumb because I've been playing it that much.
Wow.
And
how many hours have you sunk into it so far?
Oh, it's probably about... I'd say we're approaching 20 at this point. But because it's like... It's reaction-based, you know, and it's a lot of sort of rhythm game and timing. So my thumb's probably pressed down on the right joystick harder than it should be, which has caused me this terrible damage. It has that rewarding sense of achievement you get from, like, a fighting game or Tony Hawk's Pro Skater back in the day. And it hasn't gotten frustrating or annoying yet. I think I may have sworn loudly once. But that's it. And I love it. And it is the best game ever made.
Mic drop.
Mic drop.
Total War Warhammer 3, you've got competition.
You're in trouble, Warhammer 3.
Heavy praise indeed. Yeah, I think it's got really good reviews. I think did it come out this year or was it last year?
No, it came out in February. It was the beginning of February, and, like, while we were going on the break from the podding. I was like, oh, I need a game to play. Yeah. I ended up buying four. But this is, like, the best one of the four that I got.
Oh, wow. And if that helped you get over that break, because, you know, we had... Do you remember we had the argument, and then one of us pulled a knife? I can't remember. It was... So, for a game to help you get over...
That got me through a lot.
That's a bit about the night out we didn't tell you.
The knife fight that we had. Because you shot on my foot. I was like, right, that's it. Get your tool. We're having this out now.
But then you had, I seem to remember, you had, it's almost like a machete, so that's kind of a Bowie knife kind of thing. Whereas I got one of those... one of those ones you get free from, like, chip shops and kebab places. So,
little plastic number.
Yeah, I mean, I tried to
immediately on my mighty abs. And I was like, "All right, James, I've just got to cut you a little bit, all right? I'll just cut you a little bit, just a little bit, all right? And we're done."
Yeah, and that was
literally nicked you. It was like a shaving accident.
I mean, I did try and gouge you a bit, like, later on, but at that point, you were like, quite rightly so, you're like, "Look, we're kind of done with it now, you know." And I called you taxi, and as a diversion,
and then some big bloke with a beard tapped us on the shoulder and went, what are you doing, lads? What are you doing? You're supposed to be friends. Yeah? What are you doing?
And then he, I think he said something about the meaning of Christmas, and I was like, shit.
Yeah. Do you think Jesus was out on Carnaby Street knifing each other? No, he weren't. And he was with Judas. He was mates with Judas. Anyway,
yeah. Judas would gouge your eyes with a kebab fork. For sure.
Right. Tell me about a film I've never heard of before called After Love, and I looked this up.
And, yes.
Like, just the promotional image for it, just, it was like, yep. I know. This is what James goes for.
Really? You're like, yeah, this is...
Yeah.
Absolutely up my street.
It was like this actress who I've seen play like a social worker or something, like looking sad, and I was like, oh, here we go.
And so the bleakness begins.
Yeah, After Love.
Hit me. So this was directed by a guy called Aleem Khan, who I don't think has done anything before or since. I'm presuming, maybe incorrectly, that he is Muslim, which does kind of link into the film. But the film centres around... so this is a film that came out in 2020. Centres around... Joanna Scanlon plays Fatima, who is a Muslim convert who lives with her husband, and all of a sudden her husband dies. And then during the kind of grieving process, clearing through all this stuff, she sees in his wallet a form of ID which has a picture of a woman on it, and there's an address on it, and she tracks this woman down to her house, and then as a result finds out about this double life that her husband was leading, and basically that her husband was lying to her throughout her life. So it centers around, you know, her identity, if the things she stood for, if they still matter anymore. About the grieving process, because she's still grieving after this person who she now feels like she doesn't know anymore, or yeah. never even knew in the first place. And about how she connects with other people that are kind of affected by this tragedy, because when people lead a double life, there's not just, well, there's kind of two afflicted parties. So it's about how her relationship kind of develops with them. I thought it's terrific. If I'm honest, I think Joanna Scanlon genuinely was overlooked for an Oscar nomination that year, because she is tremendous. So she...
Yeah, I'm wondering what else I've seen her in.
You'll have seen her in The Thick of It. She plays like the hapless...
That's it.
She plays a hapless secretary, Terry. Yeah, and she's really funny in that, actually.
Yeah.
This is completely like left field performance. I think she's been in like other stuff like... The Day to Day or things like that as well. She's kind of, I think, goes around.
I think she's got a bit part in an episode of Spaced.
Yeah, so I looked this up. Yeah, she's Nurse Ratched in one of the chaos
in the restaurant.
Yeah,
is it a restaurant.
No, there's like a.
It's like a canteen. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, and then she's giving out all the pills and stuff at the front. Yeah, yeah. So she plays her. But yeah, it's just amazing, and it's just her full commitment to.
I was sure when I looked this up, I saw it described as a horror film. But you're saying it doesn't sound like a horror film.
I wouldn't. I'd describe it as maybe psychological drama in parts. Mm. But it's there are some horror aspects of it. There's a really arresting image where she's getting the boat from Dover. And she looks back out to the white cliffs. And as she does, they suddenly collapse, which is kind of signifying, well, either her mental collapse or everything that she once knew has now literally fallen into the sea. And that was quite a weirdly frightening image, even though in of itself it wasn't that scary. But no, it's definitely more of a psychological study.
Okay.
I think what I really like about this film as well is she is Muslim, and she still has she's a converted Muslim, so she's a white woman who's converted because she married her husband. But she still connects with her husband's family, who I don't think she doesn't kind of tell them about that because she wants her husband's memory to still be cherished by them. But I really like the way the film kind of addresses the kind of aspects of her religion, but doesn't make it about being Muslim and all the kind of movie stereotypes that falls into. Like, it's just kind of part of her life now, and it's they don't make a whole big thing about, like, oh, it's a test from God and things like that. It's hard to explain maybe without having seen the film, but there's a scene at the end where I think they're getting together for like a wake or a celebration of his life or whatever, and you see the family, they're all sitting around, and there's certain traditions and things that they kind of enact out, but it never makes a big thing out of it. It's just kind of seen as a normal part of everyday life. So I really liked it. Again, it's quite kind of small scale, quite minimalist. I mean, some of it is set in Calais, but that's, you know, it still seems very, very bleak, which I always like. I just love anything. Not many characters in it, so it's really like focused around a few key characters. So
let me ask you a question. When you were a kid, did you ever actually get to go to a video store and rent stuff?
I mean, I was renting games mainly, because that was back in the day where you could
So you didn't like ever go in and ask for recommendations of a movie or anything like that?
I don't think so, no. Why is that?
I can just imagine you going up like with Radiohead in your ears sort of thing. And sort of like, can you rent me a movie? It's gotta be English, it's gotta be set in Skegness by the sea on the greyest possible season possible. Do you have a movie?
Yeah.
And the guy's like, I don't know, Escape from LA?
I don't know. I should slap you for saying that. Yeah, it's like,
what is it though? Let's get to the get to the root of this, James. What is this about? Because, like,
all right, fucking,
you could watch the Fast and the Furious movies, which is some muscles, bikinis.
Yes,
but you don't. You're like, I want duffel coats and clouds. Like, what is it?
I don't know. I just think it's quite reflective of real life, and actually I think I like that for my films as I get older, more and more strangely, in that I cut off the escapism elements. I'm like, I want, it's like life can be really relentless and dull sometimes, and I want that in my films.
Okay, realism.
I'd say realism, not quite kitchen sink realism, but pretty you know. And to be honest, I think it's just in my nature that if there's any media out there that basically says the world isn't a good place and primarily people are pretty messed up individuals who don't really know what they're doing, I'm like, sign me up. Like, just
sign me up.
Yeah.
Did you see Morrissey is doing a residency in Las Vegas?
Yeah. What? So what does that mean, to do a residency?
So it basically means that he's like literally in concert there for a month solid.
Ah, okay. That seems,
maybe longer, actually. I think people have done like a year-long residency before.
Oh my god, are they allowed to leave?
This is the thing, I can't see Morrissey going through with this, because wasn't he a person who was like, right, all venues that I go to and perform at have to be vegan now? So what's he going to do with Vegas? Because they're never going to agree to that.
He also, like, on more than one occasion has called off gigs because someone in the audience has said something unkind or something like that.
It's just, it's not going to happen, is it? Because
no,
I would suggest to you, let's go catch a Morrissey show. But you know what? There's no clouds in Las Vegas, so there's no point.
But but Las Vegas would be perfect, because it's like that kind of plasticky veneer, and actually hidden underneath it is like broken people and broken dreams. So in many ways,
man, it's amazing when you go down the street you're not supposed to. Ooh.
See, that's what I do. I want to be that dark tourist in LA. So I don't want to visit the casinos, I want to visit the crack dens.
Yeah.
The fucking, the shanty towns.
Yeah.
Because I'm just like, I know they project this image of it, it's like, but I just know it's not like that.
There's a couple of times in Las Vegas where I'm like, guys, we've walked too far and we've walked to the wrong bit of town.
You're not meant to
and
be here.
None of you seem as worried as I am. Why?
Honestly, man, I'd go to Nevada with a spade and just be, if anyone asks me, it's about, I'm looking for the bodies, because they're apparently all out here, aren't they? So, Yeah, I just seem to revel in the kind of dreary, depressing aspects of life. It says a lot, or maybe not, about me. I don't know. But yeah, and I definitely do it in phases as well. That seems to be my thing at the moment. Like, you could probably ask me in 6 weeks' time and be like, no, I don't like that sort of thing. But it hasn't happened yet, so.
Fair enough. So that's After Love. And that is, what did you watch that on?
What did I watch it on? I think I watched it on, great question. I think Amazon.
Yeah, I think that's where I saw it.
Just like a standard, like, no subscription through Amazon or anything. But yeah, just cool. A classic.
Classic. All right. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to talk about a show where season 3 actually kicks off at the end of the month. So it's a good idea to catch up on series 1 and 2 now. And it will only take 8 hours because each episode is only 30 minutes long. And that is this little show on HBO called Barry. Now, Barry is quite simply fucking excellent. And it revolves around a former Middle East war veteran called Barry Berkman, who now works as a somewhat disillusioned professional killer hitman, and has a handler. It gives him various jobs and that kind of thing. And suddenly he winds up in an acting class, and he gets like this acting bug when he's in LA, when one of his targets is a member of like an amateur theater group who he has to kill. And he's very conflicted about it and decides to become an actor. And this brings him into conflict with the Chechen mob, who are themselves at war with the Ecuadorians, I think it was.
Oh, right.
And Barry gets caught up in all of this, often hilariously, often very, very darkly. Now, facts about me. I love retro superheroes. I love space exploration. And I love a story about a hitman, which I'm pretty sure I've said before on this podcast. So Barry is the best story about a hitman going right now. Bill Hader is a likable presence. He's always been sort of a supporting player rather than a leading man.
Yeah.
But he's always been really good and really kind of likable and relatable. And the sort of dark comedy here really pushes the sort of likability factor, because it walks a very fine line between, you know, this character being likable, you want him to succeed, but then he does some really despicable things.
Oh, he's a good dude. He's done some bad
shit. It's kind of like, because shit just gets out of control and people close to uncovering who he is and that kind of thing, he has to kill some people that you don't necessarily want to see die, who don't deserve it and that kind of thing. And it's really, you know, a lot of it unfolds like a very tragic comedy at times. And I mean, it's just, it's so good, because I think Henry Winkler, the Fonz himself, he's like a main character in this. He's the guy who runs like the amateur theater group. And it's Henry Winkler. He's the goddamn Fonz, you know? So he's like the most likable old man in America, probably. So, you know, they have him get caught up in it, and it borders on like real sadness. And it occasionally threatens to like overwhelm the whole thing, because you really don't want anything bad to happen to Henry Winkler. But then on the other side of that, you've got like the bad guys. There's this guy in the Chechen mob called Noho Hank, who is one of the most fantastic comedy creations I've ever seen on TV. He's played by this actor called Anthony Carrigan, and he just steals every scene that he's in. And even when he's not in it, it's so funny. Like, Barry will be looking at his thing and it will say, like, you know, Noho Hank comes up on his phone. It's like a text message, and it reads like, you got to do the job now, this time here, you know, so-and-so, so-and-so, sort of thing. And then he sends like a gif afterwards of like a kitten hanging on a branch. It says, hang in there, kind of thing. And it's just like stuff like that. And season two sort of like really kicks things up a gear and has some excellent episodes. There's this whole episode where like Barry is blackmailed by this cop into going and killing the cop's wife's new lover, and he ends up doing it. But then the guy's daughter comes home and she's like in a kung fu suit and she like kicks the shit out of him. And the whole episode is like Barry, like wounded and bleeding, like tracking this little kid in a kung fu suit all over town. And it's like Raising Arizona or something. It's just excellent.
Oh, okay.
And then like the sort of final episode of season two is just amazing. Like this whole like massacre happens out of like an anger management problem kind of thing. And it's happened so quickly and it's over and you're sort of like, whoa, this scene is just like reset the entirety of the show. Like, how are you going to come back for season three?
Oh, shit.
It's just absolutely amazing. And I love stories about broken people trying to do impressions of normality and failing. I love that. That's brilliant. And this is very much like that. And it's probably the second best thing on TV at the moment. And it's coming back for season three, end of April. How long it'll go on for, I don't know. But Barry, HBO, watch it.
Yeah. Bill Burr watches it as well. He always waxes lyrical about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's excellent. Like Bill Hader, he wrote most of the series. I think he directed a big chunk of the episodes as well.
Bill Hader's great, to be fair, whenever I've seen him in anything. Well, just out of interest, what's the first best show on TV right now?
Succession.
With Monsieur Cox.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a guy. I once saw him at a play in London, and he was shit.
He was shit. What was the plot? Well,
oh, I can't remember. It was like an Irish ghost story. And he, the thing with Brian Cox is genuinely a tremendous actor, but he does like to overact sometimes. And my God, did he overact in this play? It was all, I also couldn't do an Irish accent as well, which was hilarious. But,
Well, he does strike me as one of those people that, you know, comes from a background of playing Scrooge on stage.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I mean? Like Patrick Stewart kind of thing.
Yeah.
Patrick Stewart we know from like X-Men and Star Trek Picard or whatever, but he's like a classic Shakespearean actor.
Oh, yeah.
Same with like Ian McKellen, but, you know, so they come from that background.
They're more Simon Callow than whoever that bearded chap was from Next Generation.
Like, I'm pretty sure, like, Ian McKellen, when he got famous, they kept asking him what his ideal role was, and it literally was a pantomime dame.
Yeah.
It was like a character in Cinderella or something like that. He just really wanted to play. So,
yeah.
Fair play. Okay, so tell me about a movie I've seen, but not for about 10 years, which is another happy-go-lucky masterpiece.
Yeah.
Dogtooth.
This is definitely the cheeriest of the trio, I would
say. Without doubt.
Dogtooth, my God. So it was directed by who I think is now probably my favorite director maybe ever. I haven't seen all his oeuvre. But,
have you not seen The Killing of a Sacred Deer yet?
Have seen The Killing of a Sacred Deer, which is
wonderful,
phenomenal.
Film.
And I thought Barry Keoghan. I always had him down as like, you know, like the kid in About a Boy, where it's just like, you're just in fucking everything and you're not that good. And I saw him in this and I was like, oh, you're a bit good, aren't you? So, yeah, phenomenal film. And yeah, I've seen The Favourite as well and The Lobster as well, which is also
terrific. Yeah, I wasn't crazy about The Lobster, to be honest.
I think the thing with The Lobster is, for me, the first half of the film is great. And then when he goes on the run and stuff, it's not quite as good. But so this was Yorgos Lanthimos's, I think it might have been his first kind of feature film. I think he might have had a couple of short films before that. But this came out in 2009. And yeah, as I say, I think no other director really kind of, like, if I could bottle up my, I don't know what you want to call it, but sense of humour or my outlook on life, if I could bottle it up and enact it on film, maybe not with this film because it is a bit wrong, but just his sensibilities, like I just get him. I feel like
it's very like stark surrealism that borders on realism.
Yes, and stuff that's...
Because that's why I felt the lobster didn't work. I felt like you took that fantastical thing and you basically, you didn't do anything fantastical with it.
Yeah, it just made it like super mundane, which I kind of, I guess, for me, that was where some of the comedy came from, where it was just like, oh, you can turn into an animal of your choice. He's like, lobster. And it's just, but yeah, I just loved it, his whole thing where it's just so demented, but it's just played straight. Anyway, so Dogtooth. It's his first feature film. It was a Greek language film as well. I looked up the cast list and they're all unknown actors. But to be honest, once you've done this, it's quite difficult to put that in your CV into anyway. So it is about a family it's like a self-imposed isolation, more from the mum and dad, or the, and they have a really unique way of looking after their children. And they basically, their home life, they want it to be, they want that to be their reality, to the point where they basically say to their children, things in the outside world will kill you. Aeroplanes are just toys in the sky. Cats are vicious serial killers, which actually, to be honest, I think a lot of people can get on board with that. And so they distort their children's lives, and their children I think are meant to be in a kind of late teens, early 20s, but they distort their lives so much that they can't their idea of what's real is just completely distorted beyond kind of anything I've ever seen in the film. So they have these specific rules, so certain words mean certain things. Child learns hears the word zombie, and because the meaning of that word, in some, by deconstructing it, would mean that it would kind of give away what the parents were doing. The parent then says, oh, a zombie's a plant, so then that child then refers to a plant as a zombie. So they've created this whole vocabulary for them. There's a brother and two sisters who have this horrible, unsettling, initially not relationship, but then it just goes fucking I mean, okay, so this film has incest, violence, rape, animal cruelty, emotional abuse, blackmail, it's got all those things in there, but it's never, despite that, it's never exploitative, and it's never kind of played, I didn't feel it was ever kind of played again for shocks. It kind of presented this as, this is their normality, and it was up to us to be like, okay, this is what they think is a normal life, now you can laugh or cry or whatever, whatever you want. And yeah, I found this film consistently, I don't know if funny is the right word, but I definitely laughed, but like in a kind of like disbelief, like what the I mean, my mouth was, some of the things they make the children do, some of the practices, like I said, there's a horrible sexual kind of incest thing, like the children greet their parents by licking them and things like that, and that's just completely normal. But then there's some really odd things in there which I've been thinking about quite a lot, where the kids are really intelligent in some ways, like they know like about science and about like the how the human body's made up, and they can recall certain things. But it's just, and for me, this is just like an hour and a half of just like, how depraved can you get without kind of going into human centipede territory? The ending, I wasn't thrilled about. There's an element of ambiguity there. I think it's something I've seen before, something I've seen again, in that its final shot lingers on something where you don't know, where you're expecting something to happen, but it doesn't. And we've all seen it, and It Follows. I've seen it before. I've seen it since. So I was kind of a bit underwhelmed by the ending, but the lead up to that ending and the whole, there's a whole thing with Dogtooth, is the parents tell the children that the only way they can leave the house is if they're Dogtooth, which is, I think, your incisor. If that switches from one side of your kind of jaw to the other, that's when you can leave the house. So a child takes that very literally.
Yeah.
And that's a fucking horrible scene. Anyway, so like, to talk about it makes it sound like I've just described a Serbian film or something where someone's just put obscenities on film and just gone, oh, look at how crazy it is. But it isn't. It's about, you know, what it means to grow up or to never grow up.
Yeah.
Familial ties, you know, control within families, you know, how your families fuck you up, quite frankly.
Yeah.
I thought, to be honest, this was an absolute, like, masterpiece. This is one of the best films I've ever seen. I'd be reluctant to watch it again, but those performances are... How do you get your actors to do those things? How do you get four people that have never acted before and say, right, in this scene, I want you to do X, Y, Z, or I want you to do a really crazy dance, which is really demented, but then put elements of Flashdance in there. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, how? It's just, it's more the, I'm just more impressed by, like, how the film's put together.
Yeah, it's a very good film. I haven't seen it for years. I saw it about 10 years ago, I think. And yeah, very impressive. You know what I would say? This movie is an excellent central movie in a three-film triple feature. Okay. You start off with M. Night Shyamalan's The Village.
Right.
Because
the
ending
trap
of The Village is very much the impulse that leads to the whole of the film Dogtooth. Put Dogtooth as a central movie, and then the final film is the documentary called The Wolf Pack. Have you seen that?
It's
basically the real life version of Dogtooth in an apartment block.
Is that where like a child basically like literally went feral?
Yeah, no, it's like six or seven kids who all look very very similar, and they did not go outside of this like New York apartment until they were like 16 or something like that,
you know.
And it's, and what they did during that whole time, all they did was stay at home and watch movies and then recreate the movies on their video camera in this flat.
Wow. I mean, that
it's
sounds
really fucked up.
Yeah, it sounds just a did that story come out after Dogtooth or before? Because
the documentary did, yeah, it came out about 5 years ago, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But it's stayed with me ever since, and like there's certain bits of it I just it's like with Painted Bird, it's like I can't stop thinking about it.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I mean, the one thing I will say that differentiates it from your usual movie is that it's in Greece and it takes place in the bright sunshine mainly.
Yeah, that's true. Yes.
So in many ways, it's the best film you've ever recommended on this podcast.
Certainly the sunniest film I've ever seen. Whether, yeah, I won't say, you know, physically because of the sun or whether it's joyous, but yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was Dogtooth.
Is that on Mubi?
Yeah, I think that was, yes, it is, yeah. And it's on Amazon. No, I'll tell you what. It was on IMDb TV and Mubi as well.
Oh, is it on that?
Yeah. It's
completely free.
It's completely free. It's got, the ads are a bit annoying, but
yeah, they are.
I've seen a couple of films. Surprise, surprise, there was a zombie film on there where I was like, I can't remember what it was called, but it's genuinely really good. And it was made for about 4p.
Oh,
and I think I watched Europa Report on that as well. Yeah, it's free, so might as well check it out.
Yeah, okay. So that's Dogtooth, now available on IMDb TV. So one final recommendation, and that is going to be a little show on HBO Max, now available on Sky Atlantic or Sky Now or whatever they're calling it nowadays. A little show called Peacemaker, which has taken an age to reach us due to HBO Max being a bit all over the shop in terms of who they sell the rights to in the UK. But eventually, it all dropped last week, all at once. None of this week-to-week bullshit. All 8 episodes, all available on demand. And I may or may not have consumed them all within 24 hours.
Wow, that's impressive. However long each episode was, that's impressive.
So, Peacemaker basically follows the Peacemaker, played by John Cena.
Oh, yeah.
Post the Suicide Squad. if you stayed around past the end credits, you will have seen that Peacemaker did not actually die from his bullet wound that he received from Bloodsport.
Did we stay around for the credits?
No, we didn't. I only saw it when I got like the DVD. The 4K, sorry.
Because when we saw it, it was the second time you'd seen it, so you hadn't seen it the first
time. Yeah, so I didn't watch the end credits scene until like the third time I watched it. So in this iteration of the story, the Peacemaker is otherwise known as Christopher Smith, and you get to know Christopher Smith a lot more. You realize that he feels incredibly guilty about having to have killed Rick Flagg in the Suicide Squad movie. And James Gunn wrote all of these episodes. He directs 5 out of the 8 episodes here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and it's very much a James Gunn product. It is very reminiscent of the movie Super that he did with Rainn Wilson, which got him the Guardians of the Galaxy job. But it's very much in keeping with what a sequel or spin-off of the Suicide Squad should be. Mm-hmm. So if you loved the Suicide Squad last year, you will like this just as much, perhaps even more than that. And in the first few episodes, it's really weird because it's almost like this Adam Sandler or Will Ferrell like man-child comedy, just with like lots and lots of violence, because you get to know like Christopher Smith and why he is the way he is, basically what led to him being like this fucked up mess. Ultimately, it's the story of someone like a broken man-child who just wants to be liked because his dad is a prick, you know. And in the second half, it's this mad dash to save the world, which very much feels like a James Gunn thing. It features like the KKK in superpowered armor. It features like government moles working for Amanda Waller on the quiet, and it features alien parasites, because of course it does. And the only drawback is that the plot actually isn't a million miles away from the plot of the Suicide Squad when you think about, I mean, it has an alien parasite element and it has a kaiju element to it. But to be honest, the whole thing is done with this constant hair metal soundtrack, this dance number opening credits, which never gets old. And it is just consistently fun, entertaining. It's just a non-stop riot. And I loved it. And I'm not even sorry I finished it all in 24 hours. I'll do it again.
And maybe I will.
Yeah.
Yeah, I need to. What platform is that on?
So this is currently on Sky. But if you've got like Now TV and the entertainment package, you can get it through there.
Okay.
And then otherwise, I think it's like on demand via Sky, whoever still uses satellite dishes, that kind of thing. Yeah.
I think it's something I will see eventually, because I really liked, as you know, the Suicide Squad. But yeah, I don't know when I'll. I mean, I think the problem nowadays is there's so much to watch, and
yeah,
so many, it's spread across so many different channels now. I kind of wish for the glory days when you just basically had Netflix and Amazon competing against each other. But you kind of need to have everything now. I mean, I watched Zack Snyder's Justice League on Nail TV, and that was the only reason I got in.
Yeah, so. And the thing is, it all adds up, and I think that Now TV, for as good as it is in terms of image and reliability, it's the most expensive, but it is the shittest.
This is a problem, and I find you'll get 3, 5.
But it has the best stuff, but
yeah,
it is the shittest.
But I find that once you get past that really good stuff, you'll just look and it's like Daddy's Home 5 or something. Like, it's
exactly. So we got about 10 minutes spare. Do you want to fuck around and do some correspondence?
Yes, I would love. I would love to fuck around, but if that's not an option, correspondence.
Okay, correspondence it is. So, email address, if you want to email us, is lunchhourgeekout, all lowercase, 2 H's, lunchhourgeekout@gmail.com. Now, I once said I would read everything we received. And so I checked the spam folder. And in keeping with that promise, I'm going to read out Kelly Ronda's email to us.
Okay, cool.
Where she just says, "Hi, how are you doing?"
Well, Kelly, I'm doing okay in the circumstances. Quite frankly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I mean, Kelly, I've just come back from a really nice break. Me and James had a little bit of trouble in London, but we got past it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I'm doing well. I'm feeling good. I'm feeling very positive, even though the world is crumbling around us.
And do you know what, Kelly? I hope you're good too.
Yeah, Kelly. I hope you're doing really well.
Yeah, Kelly. I hope
really well.
And by the way, when I said good, I did it in inverted commas. No, I don't actually genuinely hope you're living your best life.
Yeah. Thanks, Kelly. So next email comes from our old mate, Will Hall.
Hi, Will.
Who's emailed us with the subject line, bubble bath, candles, and lunch hour geek out.
Is that a wish list, or should I go to Wilkinson and buy these things?
It's hard to tell at this point. Let's see how this email goes. So he says, "Dear Jason Statham and the Argonauts, whilst you were having a short break from making the Lunch Hour Geek Out, I realized that there are other podcasts out there. Who knew?
Outrageous. Yeah.
What are your favorite podcasts and why? Hugs and kisses, Will." Now, I think that we've answered this under someone else's email on a previous episode, but because it's you, Will, we're going to answer the question again.
The thing is, I think it was Will that asked the question. He's gaslighting us to make us like doubt ourselves.
Do you think? No, I don't.
No, I think so.
I feel like it was someone else.
You know, I know this guy. He's no good. He's
no good.
If there's a man capable of treachery and abominations of all kinds, I'm also setting on my phone so I can look at what podcasts I'm subscribed to. So, sorry, carry on with the email. Sorry.
All right. So I'll say, podcasts I listen to are Junk Food Cinema and The King Cast. Those are like my go-tos. The King Cast is a Stephen King one. Junk Food Cinema is like a cult movies one. I recently got into something called The Big Picture, which is amazing because it's politics free and it's run by Americans. And I can't believe the good conversations they're having with no politics. And it is incredible.
Do they not even bring it up just by accident?
No.
Somebody not even once say, "Oh,
they talked about licorice pizza," and they never talked about it in problematic terms. They talked about the Will Smith slap thing the other day, and even that didn't get like all maudlin and cloying and all that shit. So, yeah, I like that one. And then for comfort, I've been listening to something called Film Junk for about 15 years. And it's this podcast run by these Canadians that are the same age as me, and it's just really nice because they're really polite. And
I love Canadians. We have more Canadian listeners. Not that we don't like others.
We did that for a little while, but then they buggered off. I don't know where they went.
God's sake, Canada. And we even went to see...
We even went to Canada.
You went to Niagara Falls to find you there.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Couldn't find one Canadian.
Nope.
Actually, out of context, that sounds very political, doesn't it? So my podcasts are, I have five. What the first one is Atletico Mints. It is cult football podcast, not really about football. It's got Bob Mortimer in it. It's actually very funny. It's very kind of irreverent. And they talk about things like, what's the best spin cycle your washing machine has done in the last 10 years? Love that sort of stuff. Kermode and Mayo's film review. I mean, it's a national treasure at this point. I haven't listened to it for a while. Couldn't get through Atletico Mints. But that's, you know, hug in a mug. The Now Playing Movie Review, who are a group of Americans who discuss kind of franchise films. So I like to listen to them whenever the latest Marvel or Star Wars thing comes out. Adam Buxton podcast, very good. But Adam... Yep. Please can you release a podcast kind of less than like kind of 9 years apart? That'd be great. And then I haven't started listening to it, but I've just recently subscribed to the Always Sunny podcast with the cast of the Always Sunny, It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia cast, which is the best show on television. So there we go. Even so with the warm recent season. So yeah, that's me.
Brilliant. So that's our correspondence for this week. Thank you, Will, and thank you, Kelly. So that's going to do it for this week. You can email us at launchourgeekout, all lowercase, two H's, launchourgeekout@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at launchourgeek. And remember, an optimist is the human personification of spring. Goodbye.
Yeah, don't be an optimist. Bye.